Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. I just got back from a trip to the Mojave, where the rocks were white and red, and the sun shone in the days, and the winds blew night and day. Bozeman, when I got back to it, looks remarkably like the town in that Severance series by comparison. Well, I'm back to my tax stuff again now that I'm home. Our first episode today was released by Ken Lane March 21st, 2020. Here is Battlefield Earth.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Night has fallen pretty much everywhere. Night on Earth. But that's all right. We are the night people, and this is our time. But boy, everything sure is terrible. It's a weird kind of terrible for most of us for the moment. Check back in a half hour, we'll probably have some more breaking news updates for you. A pair of penguins broke out of the aquarium and they're on the loose. On jet skis. Probably somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico by now. You know where they're headed. The good people of Ogden, Utah have taken to pressing their bare buttocks against their living room windows each day at 4:45 p.m. while screaming. In solidarity with nurses. Lasting freedom is forged in crisis. There was a panic in a local Sprouts market in Maricopa County on Thursday when a wild peccary went rampaging through the bagged snacks aisle, leading to fears of javelina to human cross-contamination. Many were trampled beyond recognition. Shoppers, I mean. God save the pigs. Stocks dropped 112% in the first 42 seconds of trading this morning on fears that nobody has heard anything from Europe in about a week now. I hope they're all right over there. I mean, what in the hell? The crew aboard the International Space Station announced on the TikTok that they are not coming back. No thanks, said Commander Eleanor Bargeld of the Space Force. And then you turn on the TV because you think, my God, it's all happening. I better see what's what. And you turn on the news channel, and they've got 8 or 9 old rich people lined up behind a plexiglass desk, and these people are unhinged. You can't even hear what they're saying, and there's no news, of course. Not during the 45 minutes when you happen to tune in early on a weekday evening. Now this one's going to tell you stories behind the stories, and that one's going to read 37 pages of court documents because there's a lot to unpack here, etc. But you know, we could probably just stick to the actual story for a bit. Kind of find out what's happening. The basics. As things stand. which nobody knows, really. Because it changes every 6 minutes, and the stuff the expert from Harvard was telling you yesterday doesn't match up with the same expert from Harvard flapping their jaw on the TV tonight. Nothing quite as terrible as television. Oh, and by the way, did you catch me, your host, Ken Lane, on Ancient Aliens on the History Channel last weekend talking about the Integratron and George Van Tassel? It said Desert Oracle Publisher under my name, but it should have just said Hypocrite. Now, I don't want to mention the one guy and his second string Goodfellas up there coughing all over each other every day live, because you shouldn't speak ill of the brain dead. So let's just change the subject, talk about bunnies or something, cottontails. It is Easter time almost. Happy spring, by the way. We just had the spring equinox. It was a beautiful day, except for what was going on with the people. The Mojave cottontail sure is cute. Those cute little buddies. You just could not ask for a more beautiful spring in the desert Southwest. I hope that's where you call home and that you're enjoying it. And if not, we'll see you after all this blows over. And I bet it's real nice right where you are. Who knew we could just turn off the smog and the noise? Who knew that all it took was a disaster to be able to get a drink to go? A cocktail for the walk home, you know? Why not? Now that we've stopped driving anywhere. Well, I've been checking in with my mom. I hope you're doing the same with your mom. Maybe even your dad. But not Uncle T-Beb. He's sort of off his rocker. He's convinced Oprah's behind the super flu, and of course he keeps that Nutria out in the backyard with all those auto parts, and he calls that Nutria baby. And I swear I wouldn't be surprised if he sleeps with it. Anyway, this is what my mom had to say about why she is well supplied and already was and did not need to fight the mobs at the Costco or whatever. And how all this might be because of her mom, who lived through the Spanish flu of 1918. She says, I stock up, probably due to the fact that my family was low income, and whenever there was a sale on something, my mom bought extra stuff because she did not have much when she was growing up. I think it was also because she and her sister and two of the three brothers had just started working in a factory in Beaumont, Texas, and came down with the 1918 flu. They had used most of the little money they had to rent a house, and they did not have much to eat until the next paycheck. They all came down with the 1918 flu, which killed many people, as you know. You've probably heard all this from me previously, but neither you nor I would be here today if they had died from that flu. They had no medicine, no money, and very little to eat. They might have survived because they were young and fairly healthy before getting the flu. But the Salvation Army was sending people out to provide soup, oranges, and aspirin, which would be left on porches and doorsteps, and which helped my family get through that awful flu. I still give a donation every year to the Salvation Army. You're listening to Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane, the only person here. Sort of like all the time, but now it's a little bit different. And we hear so much about people in their city apartments and the suburban people. But one thing you don't hear about all too much is about the sparsely populated areas, the small towns, the rural towns, the people who live in the sticks and the boonies in the middle of nowhere. Well, before I lose my place here, the sounds you're hearing tonight are by Joshua Tree's own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. You're listening to Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane, the only person here. Sort of like all the time, but now it's a little bit different. And we hear so much about people in their city apartments and the suburban people lined up at the Costco. But one thing you don't hear about too much is what's going on in the less populated parts of our weird nation. So thanks to the magic of the telephone, we get to visit with our friends and comrades. As St. Paul said, there are no colleagues in a collapse, only comrades. And tonight we've got Terrence Ray from the beloved Trillbilly Workers Party podcast out of the great state of Kentucky. Welcome, Terrence.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. We last talked on your show a few months back.
We did.
Well, I guess we were talking mostly about invisible monsters, so everything's kind of the same.
Yeah, the size of the monsters have shrunk down to, you know, microscopic level, but they are still around us everywhere.
Yeah, so it's good that we have that uneasy, constant dread with us. And you were about to tell me something about where you were from, which is not Eastern Kentucky originally. What was that?
I grew up in southeastern New Mexico, which I don't know if you've ever been down there. It is the desert. It's probably a little bit different from the desert you live in. But, you know, recently you had Anna Merlin on the show. She is a fellow New Mexican.
That's right. And she's from Santa Fe, I believe.
That's correct.
But down in southeast, that's down by El Paso.
That's right. I grew up about 3 hours from El Paso in a little town called Hobbs, New Mexico.
Hobbs, yeah. New Mexico. Does that have anything to do with Buddy Holly?
So Buddy Holly grew up in Lubbock, Texas, which is only about an hour and a half from Hobbs. That's where I was born in Lubbock, actually.
Home of the Lubbock Lights.
That's right. And Texas Tech University.
Terrence, what the hell is crackling over there?
I don't know. Is it on the sound itself, or does it sound like it's behind me?
No, it's like a plug that's not in all the way.
I'm sorry, Ken. It's really are.
It's like a staticky, but you don't hear it on your end.
I don't hear it on my end, but are you still hearing it?
I'm trying to nail it down. Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Well, I think you're probably right. I think that most people right now are communicating via telecom. Maybe as a result, we flooded the bandwidth. We flooded the world's bandwidth.
Look at that. That doesn't work in a crisis either.
Nope.
I think I'm seeing a pattern.
Very little of our system works in a crisis, Ken. That would defeat the whole purpose.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it wouldn't be a crisis. It would be, what do they call it on CNBC when things are collapsing and they don't want to admit it? A speed bump in the economy.
A speed bump.
Yes.
A blip, a hiccup.
Yes, yes. It's time to buy. We were talking about the small town that you're from, which is Hobbs, New Mexico. And we were also talking about it's truly a desert thing to talk in 3 hour distances about the next town. Like, oh, it's only about 3 hours from El Paso.
Right. Yeah, it's about 3 hours from El Paso. Only about an hour and a half from Lubbock. Lubbock, Texas.
And that's where you're actually from, Lubbock.
Well, I was born there. My family's mostly around. So my dad's side of the family's from Fort Stockton. So I know you know about Marfa, but my dad's family's from a place outside of Marfa called Imperial. My mom's family's from Hobbs. The part of New Mexico I'm from is the southern part, which means it's not quite the destination that people... And every time you tell somebody you're from New Mexico, they're like, yeah, Taos. Well... It's a little different than Taos. It's mostly oil rigs.
It's more like Odessa or Midland or something.
Exactly.
A lot of creosote.
Pretty flat, a lot of creosote. You have vinaigrette at where you're at. You ever heard of those?
Yeah, people have the weird habit of calling them sun spiders here, which is, I don't know why, you know. They come out at night.
Yeah.
They're very fast. They're like, how would you describe the beloved vinaigrette?
Well, it's a very large insect, if this is the same one we're thinking of. People have different names for them. But they look very foreboding, very hairy.
Don't you also have extremely large centipedes?
We do.
In They're East Texas very large. And southern New Mexico?
Yes. They're very large. We would always stay away from them. Another thing that we have... So let me paint a portrait. Maybe I can paint a portrait for you of Hobbs, New Mexico.
Do that.
Very flat. Like you said, a lot of creosote, mesquite bushes. We have horny toads. If you squeeze them, they'll spit blood out of their eyes. We have a lot of oil. You look out at the landscape and you see mostly oil derricks and oil rigs. Right now, with the economy crashing... One of the reasons the economy is crashing is because of the oil market and oil industry in the Permian Basin. So where I'm from, they call it the Permian Basin because in the modern era, the place that you live is defined by the mineral in the ground.
Yes. Very resource centric.
Exactly. They call it the Permian Shale Basin. I think that in North Dakota, they've got the back end,
oil field. Yeah, which is filled. When I was there a couple years ago doing some reporting there, it was filled with people from East Texas, people from Odessa and Midland coming up there for the oil jobs that are now all gone there.
Just up until recently, up until the oil industry started collapsing, you would have a lot of these man camps. It was something like straight out of the 19th century. Have you ever read that Western book, Warlock?
I have not.
Oh, Ken, I can't recommend it enough.
A Western called Warlock. Does it have actual warlocks in it, like doing magic?
That would make it a lot better than it even already is. It's by Oakley Hall. I believe it was his only book that he ever wrote. All right, you know, I'm probably getting that wrong. I'm going to get a lot of things wrong. So,
That's all right. We're in a crisis. And we're in a crisis. You know who gets laid off first? The fact checkers.
That's right. You should read Warlock. It's based on Tombstone, like the story of the gunfight at the OK Corral, but it is very much also a story about the Wobblies. Thomas Pynchon loved it. It was one of Thomas Pynchon's favorite books.
All right, that's a good endorsement.
Whenever I think of man camps and resource extraction, I always think of Warlock because it was such a big part of the West and of the desert. It doesn't really get talked about very often. When we think about the West, we think about, you know, the American ideas, the cowboys and Indians. But the biggest story in the West is, you know, not just displacement, but displacement and resource extraction. And that is Hobbs, New Mexico, to a T. So you've got oil, you've got some cotton and peanut farms. But really the thing about Hobbs in Carlsbad and that whole area in southern New Mexico, the thing that to me really sums it up and kind of lends itself to the weird, surreal elements of the desert is that it is one of the nation's premier locations for nuclear waste disposal.
Oh, yeah. And I think we love to do that in the desert.
It kind of makes sense. There's a lot of land. You dig a massive hole and you just dump a bunch into it.
Now, through what series of life mistakes did you go from there to another heavily resource exploited place in Appalachia?
Well, back in 2012, I had just graduated college and I was looking for a job. I worked at UPS and I was miserable. I got a job at, you could call it a job, but it was through AmeriCorps. The AmeriCorps VISTA program. You ever heard of the VISTA program?
Oh, I know VISTA. An old friend of mine, Mojo Nixon, after he graduated in North Carolina, he worked for VISTA, as he used to say, organizing winos.
That's pretty accurate. The VISTA program, for those in your audience that may not know, it was started in the 1960s in the War on Poverty. The VISTAs would go into these impoverished communities in New Mexico and Appalachia and all over the U.S. and the Deep South, the Delta and inner city Chicago and whatnot. And their whole raison d'etre was to basically fight poverty. They had the very vague mission of fighting poverty. Again, this was when the government actually tried to manage the contradictions of capitalism and actually try to alleviate poverty because it was, you know, unseemly for a developed nation like ours. Over time, the program has been so gutted that now it's basically a job placement program for nonprofits.
Right. We see them at our local land trusts out here in the desert.
Exactly. That's exactly.
AmeriCorps right. Seasonal hires, usually on college break or just out.
So that's what happened. I got hired at, I originally wanted to go back to New Mexico. I was a college student at the University of Texas in Austin. And I thought, you know, I want to go back to New Mexico, work on environmental issues around fracking and oil. But just through some stroke of fate, someone offered me a job out here. And I thought, okay, why not? It's a lot like New Mexico in some ways. And that's how I wound up in Kentucky. I just never left.
So you're in Whitesburg. And that is, you're kind of by the gaps there, right?
Cumberland Gap.
Yeah. And then there's another gap kind of due south of you. What is it, Pennington Gap or something?
That's right, Pennington Gap in southwest Virginia.
Right, the tri-state area. You look at, as many of us have been forced to look at the internet even more than we did before when we had anything else to do. And you got people talking about being in apartments and not really able to go out and do much. And it's different in rural America. I'm in a town of about 20,000. I'm on the edge of it. So 10 times bigger than Whitesburg, I guess.
Just about. We have about 2,000.
And I imagine we have a pretty similar scene as far as retail and fine dining and other such things. But describe Whitesburg on a normal weekday.
On a normal weekday, you've got a thriving little downtown. It's kind of thriving and kind of not. Ever since the coal industry went bust, it's, you know, you've got some shuttered storefronts, but it's mostly still pretty energetic. You've got people running around, and you know everybody. You know the mayor by name, and it's just about like Northern Exposure. Remember that show from the early 90s?
little town in what, Alaska?
Alaska, yeah.
That shows where Sarah Palin got her start, right?
Sarah Palin and David Chase of Sopranos fame.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know they were married.
The things you learn, you know.
Yeah, a long time ago. There was no internet.
Right. Whitesburg is, it sits right on the North Fork of the Kentucky River. So you got a nice little lazy river going through town and people walking about and, you know, greeting each other. But in the last few days, things are just a little bit weird, probably like that in your town too, and in most cities in America. Everything's just, there's just a little tension in the air, and no one's quite sure what to do with it. As you know, Ken, you've got haulers. Most of the communities around here started out as centered around the particular nook in a mountain that the people lived in. And the coal industry, when it came in the late 19th century, kind of started to rearrange that with coal camps and coal towns and railroad towns. But it is still more or less the same. It's, you've got people living right next to the creek in a little mountain holler. Out west, you may call them hollows, but around here, they're called hollers.
Right. Holler is supposedly the way that it was pronounced in 17th century England.
I didn't know that, but that makes sense.
And it is one of the delights of existence that Appalachia has preserved the way that people spoke in England 400 years ago. So when you think, you know, oh, it sounds kind of strange, it sounds kind of backwoods, you think, well, you know, Shakespeare probably spoke that way. Can you imagine? We ought to do like a King Lear all in Appalachian slang, nasal accents.
I'd be all for that. I think it would be a huge hit.
It might be better than those actors croaking Imagine into Instagram that everybody was outraged over.
It's good to know that in times of crisis, you can have millionaires forcing you to listen to them sing John Lennon. To me, that's a pretty comforting thought.
That really is the oppression of the working classes defined right there. You know, it's not Big Brother, it's Wonder Woman. Thank you for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. Ken released his most recent episode this past week on March 17th, 2025. This offering is called Remembrance of Lost Time, Anniversary of a Lockdown.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, the sublime southwestern realm of the Joshua Tree and the Jackalope. From East California to West Texas, the wildest part of America. another winter storm blasting the mountains and the Mojave beyond, and I awoke to snow-dusted hills. Preferable to the cold, driving rain of the morning previous, when, heroically, the dog and I completed the usual morning walk up to the ridgeline. But when we returned home, he was unwilling to go outside again, even to investigate the bunnies. I dried him off, and he slept by the fireplace, soaking up heat instead of rainwater. The creatures continue their return to this little bit of desert they call home from spring to late autumn, at least. The relative protection of this fenced acre or so, safe from the wrecking crews of yard workers and poison sprays, as long as I'm around. The Mojave cottontails are fattening up on whatever green sprouts appear. My favorite pair of mourning doves, who barely step aside for me, so comfortable they've become these past five springs on my patio. The hummingbirds are back too. Glory be. Which means glory be to God, if you've grown up in the past 40 years or so, never heard the whole phrase. I've been listening to one of my favorite history books again, Will Durant's Caesar and Christ, the audiobook version read by Grover Gardner, my favorite American narrator. We all have our various preferences, which we are nearly helpless at keeping to ourselves. And my preferred audiobook narrator is a British voice of approximately 75 years old, mellowed by scotch and cigar. Maybe you know the type. Latin, Greek, and French phrases are expertly yet casually pronounced. And you can almost see a wiry, gray-haired eyebrow raised slightly when some outrageous detail is delivered in deadpan style. Like, the dead king was found next to his beloved sheep who also died of injuries, etc. The gold standard, a phrase we keep using despite gold no longer being the standard and the unsolved, unresolved mystery of Fort Knox, is Charlton Griffin, best known for his rich readings of the Sherlock Holmes stories and some M. Somerset Maugham books. Griffin's reading of the unabridged decline and fall of the Roman Empire, that's the big one. But Will Durant was American, a great American who, over 40 years and 11 volumes, taught millions the story of civilization. As he titled his life's work, joined by his wife and longtime researcher Ariel Durant as co-author on the final five volumes. Grover Gardner is the perfect reader for these immensely popular and philosophically deep and narratively rich histories. We are unlikely to again see a time when 11-volume, 14,000-page Pulitzer-winning world histories become best-selling blockbusters and are actually read by millions of middle-class people. For self-edification, self-enlightenment, but these titles remain popular today as audiobooks and even YouTube clips for the younger people who can't concentrate for more than a few minutes. Caesar and Christ, the third book in the series, takes us from the early days of Rome to its embrace of Christianity during the waning days of the Roman Empire. And while I've read the hardcover at various points in my life, initially in 1997, I think, and I've listened to the audiobook several times over the past 10 years or so, this time around, I hear every argument regarding the decline of our own civilization in this text from 1944. And yeah, the decline of our civilization is real and obvious to all but the angriest and loudest deniers, with their endless streams of spittle-sprayed obscenities. This painful decline, that's why everybody's so crazy now. Everybody. It has reached every level of society. It is impossible to ignore, impossible to explain away. Reading and math comprehension have plummeted, especially among people holding academic degrees, people who have taken academic tests, with the collapse measurable across the Western world beginning very strongly in 2013. That's the year my old flip phone fell out of my pocket while I was meditating under a juniper along the Joshua Tree National Park boundary. An event I recall with some detail because it ended my avoidance of the iPhone. Because it had rained that afternoon, and by the time I returned to the spot and found my old, what was it, Motorola, Samsung? Whatever it was, I got soaked through and through. I tried the old bag of rice trick, the usual stuff. And then I went down to the Apple store in Palm Desert and bought my first iPhone. Only when my hearing started to fade, another 5 or so years later, did I start using it with any regularity, and that was to listen to audiobooks. When the ringing in the ear got bad. But I could have done that with a $20 MP3 player. From elderly grandmas withdrawing their life savings for Brad Pitt texting from Nigeria, to 28-year-olds unable to understand credit card loan interest, a sort of baffled ignorance is the default state of mind. Every day, another fantastical bit of nonsense makes the rounds again. Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and cable news for the oldest and slowest. Space aliens crash their flying saucers here. But they're really angels, and you need to pay some UFO grifter $25,000 a year to be in the know.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Happy Ides of March, happy St. Patrick's Day, and happy 5-year anniversary of the COVID-19 lockdown. The beginning of it, anyway. 15 days to slow the spread. Not a great slogan for what it cost, but that's what we got. Much of the world is much the same as it was 5 years ago. Same iPhones in our pockets, same president, same daylight savings time. I am living proof of all that, the basic sameness of the situation, as I send you this transmission from the same place where I've been for these last long 5 years, since America and most of the world closed for business. Well, that's not true. Closed for humanity, for society, for family, weddings, beach days, playgrounds, classrooms. But open for business. A very weird time for America. An interesting time in America. A time when you literally could not say what was on your mind unless you hit it within a parable. The parable is, for those of you who haven't touched a Bible in a while, a fable or short story that teaches a moral or a wisdom lesson. Parable, from the Greek parabole, meaning comparison or contrast, or an allegory in this case, or a parabolic mirror, referring to the juxtaposition of cone and plane. Diocles named this device some 2 centuries before the birth of Christ. So if you listen to the radio episodes from 2020, all of which are still available on the Corporate Computer World podcast platforms, because they never attracted the ire of the authorities, the censors, the fact-check departments, you will hear many parables about our strange days, our enforced isolation of that time, that era, stories of animals, of dreams, of spaceships. One of the early parables in the weeks before lockdown, but when those with eyes to see and ears to listen knew it was coming, was about a rocket to Mars, about one-way flights, that sort of thing. Sometimes the visions get tied up with the parables. Not too many days after the forced lockdown, including, incredibly, the locking down of open-air public beaches, public parks, and the national parks, my then 11-year-old son and I were hiking along the edge of our local national park with the dog, as we've been doing every day for all the years we've lived here in this area. And I saw a couple of the buzz-cut weightlifting bros, sort of law enforcement rangers, parked up there with their NPS police vehicle, where an old dirt road enters the park's backcountry. And they're staring us down with their hands on their guns. On their holstered guns, to be precise. But ready to shoot these two people, quite obviously members of the same family, walking their dog outside on a sunny spring day. And these cops, these people trusted with motor vehicles and firearms, are standing there like steroid Stepford wives, and my son and I looked at each other, amused and baffled by these square heads with dead eyes, programmed to kill. I tormented the goons for a while for sport, smiling, acting dumb, asking where they lived, asking who they were intending to shoot. Mind you, we never made any attempt to cross the magic line where it was illegal to be outside, being quite satisfied with the thousands of square miles of identical open desert on our side, our neighborhood. After that, I figured I'd ignore the whole production as much as possible and avoid places where I might run into the dead-eyed pandemic goons. Generally, I had a pretty good 2-year collapse of society. Can't say the same for my sons, who lost prime years of their life. They did, though, gain an early education in bureaucratic evil. in the herd mentality of the Zoom meeting zombie class that dominated human existence in the years that followed. Good lessons to learn. Better to toughen up and know your enemy. But overall, compared to the nightmare lives of people stuck in apartment buildings and crowded cities, we had a relatively benign collapse out here. Because there was very little society here to collapse to begin with. In a Mojave Desert small-time, small town where you pretty much have to drive an hour to do anything, from getting a tolerable dinner out to going to Trader Joe's or Target, as people like to do, or Costco. I guess that's the standard of an actual functioning community in the early 21st century in America. An enormous Costco at the freeway off-ramp. Well, as soon as it was apparent that the mask thing was a mass delusion that was not worth going to war for, I ordered a couple of special black cloth masks to drape over my beard like some Victorian mourning curtain. Because the regular rubber band masks were made for, I don't know what, like hobbits with little muzzles. And I just left those cloth mask in the glove box in the car in case I went somewhere requiring this costuming, which happened rarely because there wasn't anywhere to go. These mail order black bandit masks were fairly comfortable the few times I wore one, and they made me look fairly menacing. So the only time anybody ever gave me any guff was when I had a medical appointment a year or two later. And they forced me to wear the little rubber band mask. So I stretched that over the other one, so it was sort of like a duckbill. Like a Daffy Duck sort of thing. Not a very dignified time for any of us. I just moved into the place where I still am. I don't like hanging around the same place for too long. It gets me down. It bums me out. 5 years is too long. Like that Merle Haggard song says, my hat can't hang on the same nail too long. My ears can't stand to hear the same old song. The place where I live has gone through a whole economic and pop cultural boom and bust and back down the other side again in those years since. People barely remember it now. It's like some mostly forgotten dream. When the government decided we were allowed to go outside again, I guess late that spring, I can't remember exactly. Well, people just flooded the Joshua Tree area. This was true in small towns near national parks all over the country because California was obviously going to be shut down long term. Those who could leave packed up, sold their houses to Airbnb grifters and headed for wherever kids could still go to school, where churches were open again, where the shops and restaurants and bars, sporting events had opened up. Arizona, Texas, and Florida, I suppose. And within a few months of moving into my house, I had no neighbors. They were all gone. International air travel was all but shut down. Domestic air travel was sort of halfway going again. By then, you'd put the peanuts in your mouth real quick when you pull the mask down, breathe a little bit, have a sip of your drink, point the little air vent on you. It's hot under that thing. Good that everybody's pulling those things on and off, sitting right next to each other in a narrow tube. Anyway, people wanted to travel, and they were mostly limited to car travel. All the fake email jobs and the video meeting jobs, you could do that from anywhere. Do it from bed. Do it from a hot tub in the desert. Why not? We had mob scenes for that first year, and then by the end of the second year, it had died down. But now I've got empty houses for sale up and down my road. I'm surrounded by them, like everybody who's still out here, I suppose. I did a lot of work on the house during that first year, like a lot of us. I just moved into the place. A few months previous, it needed some work, as they say. Bring your toolbox, as they say. If the real estate ad says bring your toolbox, that means it's a tear down at best and a Superfund site at worst. So, I had workers and contractors and appliance installation guys coming and going all the time. They would knock back off 6 or 8 feet away from the door, and they'd have their little mask tight over their whiskers. The guys would ask if they should wear the mask inside, and I'd say, no, I don't care. In summertime, you could see them sweating underneath those things and the red lines on the face. And with a regular daily traffic of those guys, along with the various delivery people, plumbers, etc., it was sort of fun. Different people to talk with all the time. I like people who work for a living, who know how to do things, people with a trade. And then I'd go to the hardware store or the Home Depot when I had to, and the places are full of contractors, laborers, and at first they have bandanas tied around their sunburned necks and sort of hold them up halfway over their mouths as they walk past the masking required signs everywhere. And the bandana drops before they're all the way through the automatic doors. Sometimes a guy would pull his t-shirt up over his mouth as he walked in, and the neck was all stretched out because he's been doing that all day. But usually everybody had what we unaffectionately refer to as a chin diaper. If you're a man with some sort of job that requires some sort of physical activity or skill, you were rocking the chin diaper. Now, being a small publisher selling a physical product primarily to vacationers, day trippers, out-of-towners, campers, my little business ground to a halt overnight when the lockdown first hit. As was the case for the hundreds of millions of self-employed people around the world. And America is the land of the self-employed, the small business person. In fact, more than 90% of all U.S. businesses are small ones, 30 million businesses employing 60 million Americans. Often a married couple, maybe a father and son, like Sanford and Son, if you remember that. Or maybe a couple of lawyers who work together in a partnership, like Cagney and Lacey or something. I had a book due to a New York publisher. That was something that used to be a big deal. So there was work to be done on that, and I worked on an issue of the little periodical, but lacked the money to pay the printers and the postage to mail it out. The most common and persistent problem with all small publishers, I've sadly come to learn in recent years. And there were no more Desert Oracle live shows, not until the second half of the following year. Izzy Santa Minerva had smiled upon me late in life and had provided me with a couple of years of regular Desert Oracle events and performances. Prior to the lockdown, I mean. I do love putting on those live shows. We used to do monthly campfire stories down in Palm Springs at this hotel that was real hot with the millennials back then. Big crowds for those things, always a lot of fun. And there were shows at Palm Springs Art Museum, the Astronomy Arts Amphitheater up by North Joshua Tree, and at Amboy Crater and the High Desert Nature Museum, all so much fun. Then all that came to a crashing halt as well. I had to give up my little homestead cabin, the Desert Oracle office on the highway in Joshua Tree. Started doing the radio show from home, or within the little studio behind the house. Read a lot of books, drank a lot of wine, watched a lot of classic movies with the kids, took the usual long hikes every day, haters be damned. It was a lot easier than what many people had to go through, like not being allowed to see their parents in the senior housing, the assisted care facilities. Like being fired from their jobs, ostracized by their communities for saying the wrong thing during those long years of insanity, thinking the wrong thoughts. Well, 5 years later, all we can be sure of is this will never happen again, not like it did 5 years ago. Even the Chinese rose up and said enough. In Chinese, probably. People who know very well what happens to those who dissent in a totalitarian state. But they stood up and they won. The CCP backed down. COVID zero was dropped down the memory hole with the rest of the nonsense, the inconvenient truth. Now even the New York Times admits what some of us knew in late 2019, when a suspiciously lethal common cold virus suddenly appeared outside the U.S. Centers for Disease Control Biological Weapons Lab in Wuhan, China. I'll never forget those TikTok video clips of people falling dead in the streets of Wuhan Christmas time 2019. I guess today those clips could be easily made with some AI video creation tool that can't be disabled in Photoshop or whatever. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to all the volunteers and supporters of KGBM. We need you. And thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, the number is 406-404-6246. I'd love to hear your personal parables, your secrets to serenity, your true stories, or your opinions. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, keep doing good things. Stay well and sweet dreams.